This episode of Doctoring Up Design is a real work group that gathered at the showroom to discuss issues that you will learn a bit more about in just a moment. First, though, Doctoring Up Design is the official podcast of Design Hardware and was created to provide you with real-world solutions to your everyday pain points as it relates to the business of interior design and architecture. In May 2023, a special gathering took place at the Design Hardware Showroom in Los Angeles. This gathering presented an opportunity to get some of LA's most dynamic and creative designers together for a conversation about designing, beginning with a forum, an open forum that is, about how the kitchen has changed in form and function since the pandemic began. In 2020, the idea started as an exploratory look at what has changed, but developed into an overarching dialogue about what it means to be a designer today. Further, how the design community has learned to lean in on one another for support, direction, inspiration, and in the case of showrooms like Design Hardware, how to provide creatives with opportunities to discover new product and specify with confidence that product so that you know it will arrive on time as intended to best serve their clients. You're about to listen in on a real work group discussing these issues designers, architects, and builders face today. The following conversation is between 12 creatives, and at times it gets complicated, just like any conversation in the real world. This conversation was not intended for you to blow through while multitasking. Take a moment. There is a great deal of material here, and it's intended to be listened to over time and re-listened as well. It's worthy of saving and adding to your resource library. This is kicked off by Michelle Solomons with Design Hardware, asking about the experience designers have with their showroom partners. It's an important question, and one on just about every designer's mind. From there, this chat takes on a life of its own, and if you follow closely, there are nuggets of design business gold to be found. Before we listen in, I thought you would like to meet the participants, a little bit about their firms and what they do, and we'll be right back right after this. Design Hardware is your one-stop design resource for stunning hardware, flooring, and unique brands that allow designers to stand out and create incredible projects. Ben Goods is a Los Angeles-based design studio that manufactures chairs, tables, and furnishings for work, home, and community. Founded in 2010 by Gaurav Nanda, a sculptor, a visual designer, who had an interest in combining elements of minimalism with utility. Nanda's works are formulated from different shapes while shifting scale and form. His distinctive lines emerge from his drawing practice, vibrant use of color, and modern gestures. Design Hardware is where you will find extraordinary companies like Ben Goods changing the look and feel of luxury design. Visit designhardware.com or on the socials at Design Hardware and Flooring.
My name is Andres. I'm an interior designer. I run a small business called Cali Renderings. We do high-end luxury custom homes all over the states. And I've been blessed enough to work with amazing clients and, of course, amazing colleagues. I wouldn't be able to do it on my own. It's literally impossible. So I'm able to build relationships and collaborate with different showrooms, different colleagues that will make my projects look absolutely beautiful and functional. I'm based in LA. But of course, we do custom home renovations all over the states. The happiness or the fulfillment, it's experienced on a daily basis. I am lucky enough to be in this beautiful field, challenging, but amazing. And it's been absolutely great, beautiful journey since I started back in Miami doing small home renovations. I had the great opportunity to work designing a private resort in Bahamas, and that's how I was able to transition from architecture to interior design, combining materials. I do a lot of modern designs, but I stay away from the cold, simple, plain, modern style. I combine materials like woods, colorful accent features that will make the experience unbelievable, pleasant for a family, who's obviously who were, you know, designing too.
I'm Christine Jahan of Christine Jahan Designs. I did Pasadena Showcase House in 2020 and 2022. I won a Red Lux Award. I have been going crazy because life with three kids and a business is quite the adventure, but I love it. And I'm so grateful to have clients that have the same ethics as I do so that we can get their homes to be this space where they love spending time with each other and love bringing friends and family over, which is, you know, that's what you want as a designer, to have people want to spend time in your spaces. And that's what you want as a homeowner too. So Christine Jahan Designs, we're based in Glendora in California. We do anything from consulting to full-scale projects, from design all the way through construction and project management. We are able to do it all.
Hi, my name is Cricket Kinzer. I'm a lead designer at Kitchen Places in Ventura. We are a design build firm specializing in kitchen and bath, but we do whole house remodeling. I just celebrated 19 years in the industry. I come from a family that my father was a nuclear physicist and my mother was a fashion designer for May Company. So I feel like this career is a perfect blend of math and science and creativity, and I absolutely thrive on it. I think it's the balance of left brain and right brain. If I spend too much time on the left side, the right side becomes hungry and I need that creative outlet. And where I am, I spent a long time as a design tech, like drafting, cabinet ordering, speccing, and it was not feeding that creative side, which is why I moved over to sales and into the showroom. And I see that I still get to express the mathematical side and the scientific side with balance and just every day. I mean, we're surrounded by fractions and decimals, and I also have the opportunity to be super creative.
Hi, I'm Huma Suleiman, creative director of Huma Suleiman Design. We are based in Laguna Beach, California. We've done projects nationally. We take projects nationwide, and really the ethos or the idea behind of designing a space for us is really comes from being able to create something for our client that is unique and bespoke. And that is really important to me and our studio. We are an interdisciplinary studio. We have architects, designer, landscape architect, artist. I love the team that I've created. We really focus on materiality and research. Every project we do, really, it comes from a space of research. So we really take pride in being fearlessly individualistic. A lot of our projects, all of our projects are extremely unique, very personalized to our client, the location, the architecture, and the people who are really going to live in. So none of our projects are like a cookie cutter. I know it probably would be easy just if we did the same thing we did the previous project. However, that's kind of against my grain. I love working with new materials, what's new out there, what kind of construction or material we can use for this project that we haven't used on the other one. That's really kind of how my project starts.
Hi, my name is James Hernandez of James Hernandez Interior Design, and I'm based in South Pasadena, California. I've been a residential interior designer for almost 20 years now, working from as far as North San Francisco, Hidden Hills, California, La Jolla, and recently just completed a project in South Carolina. So since the pandemic, construction, timelines, remodels have increased dramatically, and what I've been doing for the past 3 years have been involved in a lot of construction and bathroom and kitchen design. My primary business as an interior designer is remodel, construction, ADU, full residential interior design services. Recently, I've been working on so many kitchens since the pandemic And my thought process in designing a kitchen is how obviously the kitchen's going to function. But I treat almost every project as if the home is mine.
I am Joan Barton from Dirty Girl Construction, the general contractor, coordinator, PM, whipper of men and women. And now the principal of She Spoke Studio. We started a design firm, sister firm, just in time for the pandemic, which was amazing. And we haven't officially launched, but we're running full-scale business. We're designing homes left and right in spaces. And it's really brought a whole new vocabulary to what we're doing as builders. And I feel like now I'm a building scientist because I'm so concerned about the lifetime of a house in a different way, sort of the way I look at a body. How can I help things survive in today's world with climate change and with pandemics, if you will, and how we're all working from home and learning from home, but now we're going back to work? There's a lot of things going on that are interesting to me as a builder in the material sense. I got down the rabbit hole with fishing nets one day and barnacle. I was like, barnacle lasts forever. Barnacle, you can't get that off. Let's make houses out of barnacle. So my head started spinning. And mushrooms and fishing nets and clothing. And all of a sudden I'm in the rabbit hole with waste streams and I'm in the rabbit hole with alternative materials. And I'm thinking, oh, how do we really become responsible for what we're doing? Because especially in Los Angeles, where we build a home and then somebody tears it down, like the next day, and redoes it, who's responsible for those materials? So I've had a lot of things going on in this crazy mind of mine. I kind of got into alternative materials because I really want to not continue to be in the waste business. I really want to be in the building and sustainable business, both as a designer and as a builder, as much as possible. So that's really where things are geared for me right now, and trying to create spaces that you can live in, that live with you, that are healthy, that are feeding your family in a different way, and also part of the planet that we live on. The cool thing about a lot of these materials is they're all biodegradable, which means they're not going to last forever. So price points and what it means to live in a home are changing because we build these perfect homes and people move in and then they mess them up. Well, who cares? Throw your cabinet door away in your garden where it will grow food for you and make you another cabinet door. That's pretty cool stuff.
My name is Kara Pipemeyer. I'm the owner and principal designer at Studio Cosma. And we are a residential and hospitality design studio based in Los Angeles. And for me, I think one of the most important things about the way we approach design is with a strong belief in the alchemy of collaboration. Believing that, you know, we're never necessarily designing for a client, we're designing with a client. And the key is that what we each bring to the table is what creates something unique and special and perfect for each person. So when it comes to restaurants, we design around a strong concept narrative to create and tell a story, because the goal is to create a transportive experience, a transportive space that that tells a story and defines a concept.
I'm Leslie Delivineri. I'm the Vice President of Architect and Designer Engagement for Aquabella. We are a new to the U.S. European plumbing manufacturer. We have beautiful baths and shower trays. Totems, which are our freestanding sinks. We make some really fun product. It's in this space and time, it's really interesting being a new manufacturer. There's so much going on and so many like changes to the world, but it's also really exciting, and I love that.
Hi, my name is Marve Brisino. I'm the owner of Marve Designs. I practice interior design in Los Angeles and many places and all over the country. I graduated architect and interiors in Miami. I did master's in Europe, and I practice commercial and residential. I'm always excited about my business. I love what I do, and it excites me to do a great space for my clients, a great kitchen for them to enjoy it, or, you know, to entertain and bring some ideas and ask them how they wanted to use it and circulate in it. And overall, bathrooms and the whole space, I like to curate the spaces so my clients feel in ease, and also they feel very... I want to design things that my clients feel like vacations on, in their own home.
Hi, my name is Mark Hermagino. I'm the principal and owner of Hermagino Designs, which is a kitchen, bath, and interior design company. We're located in Los Angeles, actually in Eagle Rock, and I've been a designer for 18 years. And really, what I really like to focus on all of my projects is, like, the first thing that I concentrate on is functionality. Since I do work on kitchens and bathrooms a lot, it's all about function and making sure that the space works right. And then from there, taking into account how a client uses the space and also their personality. So it's fusing, you know, what my style is, which I call like Cali style, and then merging their styles and the way of life that they're going to use the space. So it's all about function, and then we go into the beautiful things, and then creating a space where a client can spend an hour or 2 minutes to go to the bathroom, or they're going to be in the kitchen for, you know, a long period of time, or if they cater a lot, making sure that if they have caterers that come in, making sure that the space is functional, not just for the homeowner or for the person that lives there, but for other people that come into the home.
Hi, my name is Nicole. I'm from Nicole Michael Designs. We have a studio in Pasadena and Newport Beach, and we specialize in new construction and large renovations. We have a background in construction. I used to work for a developer, so I understand construction very well. And we really like to get into the project when the plans are actually being drawn. We find that a lot of clients don't really take their everyday life into consideration when they're designing a home. And it's very painful when we get a set of plans from a client and then they realize that, oh my God, my master closet is too small. Oh my God, my master bedroom is huge. How am I going to fill this with furniture?
Hi. I'm Ridhima Brar. I am the owner of Arterior Studio. We are a small boutique interior design firm based here in Los Angeles, primarily focusing on residential, trying to work my way into small commercial as well. I started my firm March 2020, not knowing the world was going to change, April 2020. And so it's been you know, an interesting ride from since then till now. A little bit about me. I am, this is my second career. I am born and raised in Kuwait in the Middle East, and I'm Indian by origin. So a lot of my design aesthetic, my style, the way I approach things come from my background. I sort of always, it also roots me back in many ways when I'm looking at new concepts, new designs, working with clients on how I want to make it my own while still making sure that their point of view is coming across.
So that is our illustrious group. You've met the participants. Let's get to the conversation. Kicking it off is Michelle Solomons with Design Hardware.
Question, are you getting information, good information from your vendors? Are they helping you? Are they your partners now? One thing we try to do here is have all that information for you. When my vendors overseas in Italy or here locally are delayed because of a COVID outbreak or something happens, that I've got that information and I'm giving it to my clients, I'm kind of participating from day one right through delivery. Are you getting what you need from vendors? I waited for Leslie to come back. Just chime in a little bit on that subject, because we're trying very hard to partner with, especially what Nicole just said. Mm-hmm. I get contractors coming in or end users coming in saying they need a floor at $6, including, and that includes install.
Installation.
You know, what, where, you know, what decade was that from? But it's the same thing. So we have to be prepared for that, and we have to make sure that you're prepared with solutions. So maybe I can't give you a $6 floor, but here's what we can do in the next price range, or here's why, or be ready for you to help you and assist you in making your projects work.
Yeah. I think we are many things. We are creative. We are psychologists. Mm-hmm. We are
therapists.
Accountants. We also trying to solve, you know, to arrange all the problems and be there for them. And what you're saying is, it's a very good point, because, you know, the expectations are so high so many times. And no, it doesn't go that much. Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't go that way. So we're here to educate them and also understand them and support them in a way.
I think you can't always do it yourself. So you need
external partners
that are there.
And definitely
to make sure that they give you the support you need on the project, right down to talking to that end user and working with you. So I think it's really important not to just go to the go-to, but find partners that help you grow your business.
Yeah, I mean, I've experienced that with, she's a wonderful rep, that your ability to spec products really relies on your relationship with your rep. Absolutely. You know, I have a favorite rep, you know, here and there that I push that product or I utilize that product and spec it because they are there for me.
Yeah.
And that is so important. Then I have some that are like, where do you still work for this company? I don't know who you are. Well, then I don't. Yeah, exactly. Right. So, because there's so many options out there and there's such a demand for our time, we have to divide and conquer. And so I have to rely on my reps or my vendors that we're partnering to bring this vision on time, on budget, on design.
It's not only that. We have to know enough about everything to keep us out of trouble, but we don't know the nitty-gritty about, let's say, wood in particular. I don't know every single thing about wood, so that's where we need you to educate us that that's probably not the best product for this particular installation. You probably, high traffic area. You're not going to want to put a walnut floor in there because it's soft. Go to an oak floor. Go to a maple floor. You know.
What Nicole is saying is very much what I wanted to say. We know abroad about many things, but we are not experts. So I think we also have to be humble enough to say, I don't know, let me have my rep from so-and-so and have you educate you more in that subject or whatever. Not like we know everything about it. I think we are nothing without our vendors, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Everything goes, but our vendors stays. And for me, it's my team, my vendors, and my clients, and that's what it's
absolutely. I think without our vendors or our craftsmen and people who are doing visualizing our design, if we don't have the right people and we don't have their support, none of this vision can come to life. We can design beautiful things, however, if they are not, you know, implementing it the right way or not on time, right? A lot of things go back. So I think it's a very important relationship, and vendors who understand that and understand the importance of that, it's like a two-way street. So I think that's when you get the best. And I recently had I did a show house in Dallas, the Kids Bay, and there was that situation happened in the show house where the show house was shut down for 6 weeks, and but the show house date was still the same. And honestly, to this day, I feel if my stone fabricator did not do what he did, like my beautiful design, my idea, all that would have been, and probably I wouldn't have been able to show my space because the show was still going on the same date. And I honestly extremely grateful to them. And for me, like any other project, I always would love to have them, because they understood what it was for them. For if they don't do the job on time, and they honestly did the impossible. They had their machine run overnight. Somebody had to go turn their machine off in the middle of the night, their CNC machine. They didn't tell me any of that. They just said, okay, we'll get it done.
I mean,
it was like to me, and I was introduced them by
one of our kids pay, you know, like a directory list. So it's not that I had a relationship with them. So for them to do that, and without them, I couldn't have done it. So, and that's why they stand out to me for anyone else. And it's like a, it's the same, right? It's like a give and take relationship. And it's very quiet. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. They're my friends. They're my people. Like, it's my team. It's also them. Mm-hmm. It's not only my girls are on my studio. It's all my whole vendors are my team.
The network that makes your project happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just got finished with, it's still running, San Francisco Showcase House.
Yeah.
And they put in one of our wall-mounted sinks. It's like a 63-inch long sink. And it arrived in many, many pieces. And the designer didn't realize that I went and picked one up from a distributor down here, got it crated, and drove it halfway up to Northern California vendor, so that, like, I took it to the wholesaler so that their truck could take it up, so we didn't have to deal with any more freight companies.
That's amazing.
That was the only way it was going to happen, was if it got there, so it was beautiful.
And
super
having
exciting.
Those kinds of partners, I mean, it's really important, especially when you do kitchens and bathrooms. I mean, during pandemic, we were getting shut down like every 3 weeks, because first it was, you know, we were told that construction was a part of it, and then when construction became an essential service, I mean, it just got crazy, and we were lucky that we were able to get product in time that ended up just sitting there waiting for it to be installed. I mean, our partnerships also too with our vendors are really important, because I know enough, but if a client asks me something really, I have a client that's an engineer, and he starts asking me really technical questions about ranges, and I'm like, I'm going to bring you to my rep at Snyder Diamond. You're going to be here for 2 hours, and, you know, ask him any questions, and he'll help you. And that's what I really like, is that, you know, I can go to any of my vendors, and I can trust them with my clients. I not only don't send clients, though, into showings without me. I like to go with them, just because I may learn something new.
Their eyes wander.
And I always am there, like, just to keep them also focused. Mm-hmm. And then they also see that, I have a team that I work with, so that they know that everybody that I work with is reliable. So they know I have 3 different contractors that I work with. I all have them on different jobs. So it's always important to make sure that your team and everybody that you're working with actually supports you.
I want to say something really quick about Mark. It's a great point. Like I said, that they are like our partners or part of our team, but it also, in my experience, I have been blessed enough to have great vendors, but it also has been the other direction. Like they just don't call, don't care, and then I'm saying it. I don't like to work with those kind of people that they don't care. So I just move on and just trying to bring people who cares about me, my clients, the product, and the final results.
Interior design without people who care, no matter what level you're on, doesn't work. You have to care.
It doesn't.
Because I had a project where the client hired their own contractor to do the bathroom, and I met him. I told him, you need to fire him. I said, I have my own contractor. The guy took the same amount of time to do one bathroom, and we remodeled the rest of the house, including new floors and a new kitchen. And the guy was still working on the bathroom. And I told him, you should fire him. I told you. I'm like,
I think every part of design is built on really great relationships, creating a successful design with your client. And then also, I think everything that we're talking about here is really building long-term and successful relationships with your vendors, too. So it's like the whole team really matters, but
I think,
you know, just like you're saying,
you know, what
having
I like,
those relationships,
you know what I like the most,
when
it gets time to communicate with the client, they're asking them what the specs of the flooring tiles, the wood floor, the kind of tops, appliances. Most of the vendors I have noticed that they're very technical, so they send me the spec sheets, and then I have to be the mediator to say, okay, I need pictures, lady, or I need visuals. So that's how we become designers and visualizers, by showing the specs of whatever we're working on to the client, who needs to understand what they're getting. And that goes back to the expectations. And then also it's tied up to the communication and relationship with the reps or the vendors. And at the same time, we have to educate them. Okay, I need my client to know exactly what's 2 centimeters. half of an inch, three quarters of an inch, whatever they need, so that they know what to expect. So that's getting all the pieces together and make the puzzle look absolutely beautiful. And that's how I started my business, doing renders. Because, you know, as designers, we sketch a few things. The client is like, okay, what in the world is that? But then I show a photorealistic render, and then, oh, wait, so that's what you meant. I was like, that was the whole purpose of it. So that goes, you know, with relationships, communication, and pleasing your clients, or pampering them, as I say.
Pampering them, yeah.
So going back to COVID, I actually felt really bad for some of our clients because a lot of these products weren't available. The ones that they wanted weren't available in the time frame that they needed it, or the factories were shut down. And so they're spending all of this money and doing all of this work mm-hmm. and having to substitute things. Mm-hmm. And I would always say, God, I think if I was in their shoes, I would just say, well, forget it. I'm just going to wait. Why am I going to spend all this money to not even get exactly what I want? Mm-hmm. So it was really surprising to me that people were still willing to move forward and just put in something lesser than what they were expecting that they were going
to
get.
I guess they just wanted to get it done.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I felt that the shipping, the freight, was so expensive.
Well, the containers.
Like, my clients had paid as equally for a table that was coming from Italy for their shipping. And I just felt really bad to say, hey, this is... But, you know, they just wanted to get it done. And it was like, oh, you know, everything is high. But I don't think it's coming down anymore. Like,
oh,
no, no, we're getting used to it.
Yeah.
They think we can sustain ourselves at these rates now, economically, through everything, food.
Well, one of the things that we've been doing is from a building standpoint, as builders, when we bring a product, is we've been calling other builders and saying, and Michelle, you're probably doing some of this, who's getting white oak, right? Who's doing white oak flooring? And we bring it in a whole container.
Yeah.
We don't just bring it in for ourselves.
That's what we're doing as well now. We don't wait.
Yeah, and then I go through a lot of my furniture vendors. I'll say, here's all the things I'm looking for, and if you have a container coming over, can I pay you X amount to get in your container? Mm-hmm. And it's less money because they might have space. Mm-hmm. So if you network a little bit outside of the norm to reduce your overhead for your clients, for yourselves, and your timeline, I found that to be a very functional way to get through things. The other thing, and Marbe, you mentioned art. I work a lot with art. I am an artist as well, so it's natural for me to go to work with all the artists. There's so many in Los Angeles where I can just say, hey, I want to create this thing, and we sit in my backyard, and we build it, and we create it, make art that goes into a home. I mean, it's a functional part of a house, whatever it is, but we start making our own lighting out of UL-approved pieces with artisans, you know, to give clients what they wanted. They saw it in a magazine. I'm like, that's cool. We can't get it for 2 years, right? But we can make it in my backyard in, like, a week.
So,
and don't tell them that.
Well, I don't, but, you know, but I know that we can make it.
That's how you get to spoil them.
Right, but really, it's really turned into how we've carried things forward. I just created an art piece. It's a railing. It's an interior railing, but we have four different artisans working on a glass blower, a metalsmith, myself, and actually Julio is working on the floor around it. And so we've got all these different artisans and subcontractors that have come together to create a piece that's a one-off. I couldn't buy it if I wanted to because I drew it, right? So,
yeah.
But even so, if I sent that out to be made and come, it would easily be 18 months and it would be four times as much money.
I did the showcase house this year and I didn't find something that I liked in the entrance. And what I found, they had only two in Los Angeles and they needed to bring three more from Europe because they needed five.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't have been, you know, arrived on time for my Pasadena showcase house. So what I did, I drew lighting and then inspired on the house and whatever, and have this great company, ADG, here in LA, who made the lightings for me. Mm-hmm. So now there's a heat and, you know, but that's exactly what we do. We get solutions, like how can we make this work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, that goes back to shipping being so expensive. I was bringing containers from Italy to LA, to Long Beach. And then the lead times were so out of control and the prices were still so high that I've been now doing it from Italy to New Jersey, mm-hmm. and then from New Jersey to yes. LA. And then it also leads me to say that fact is bringing us to deal with more local vendors, mm-hmm. with LA fabricators, you know, people that we can do it in a shorter time frame. And it's a beautiful thing as well, because now we're going back to let's make it happen here in the States,
yeah.
and deal with our own neighbors and colleagues, mm-hmm. that we could make the same beautiful project but in a shorter time frame. And
it's a little exhilarating too, because you have to find those people, mm-hmm. and it's either a word of mouth or let's take a chance.
So I think it makes your end product even better.
Even if you get a little nervous, that's what we hear.
Yeah.
No, but you asked me what to get, I tell you.
Yes.
I was so nervous to see the lightings I designed in the real life. I said, right. What about if they look cheap or yes. a dollar store or whatever? I do, you know what I mean? Like, oh.
The lights were fabulous, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they were
fabulous. I was not invited, so I cannot tell you. But I'm sure it was beautiful.
Well, I'm inviting you now.
Yeah, I found that with the artisans, especially, I've had to get on the learning curve of really understanding the limitations of the artist and the artwork. Like, I didn't know really what it took to blow glass before we blew glass in the studio. I mean, I'd seen it. I've been to Vegas. But I really needed to understand, like, how does this form come to life, and what does it take, and what does it take to combine two dissimilar metals? I mean, as a builder, I know what it's like to build between two dissimilar metals, and how I should or shouldn't for certain applications because it'll degrade. But to join steel and bronze and create a piece that one is literally sitting inside of the other, what does that take for that artisan to do? And how does my design reflect those parameters or those limitations, or can we do more? That's been a really interesting new train for me, as I guess as an artist and a little bit as a scientist, to just go like, what happens with
yeah.
that?
Yeah, but I think it makes your next piece maybe potentially even more successful, or helps yeah. you push the boundaries. I know for myself, designing custom lighting and custom furniture, it's like learning from the people who are fabricating it, what their limitations are, you know, kind of how they can stretch those boundaries. The next piece I design, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, I already have this higher starting point mm-hmm. that I can start from. Yeah. It saves the client money and time, and it actually makes you better, yeah. which is so exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like when I get a drawing from a designer, and as you know, when I'm building, and I go, well, did you consider gravity? You know, like...
No. To me, as a designer, seem like this is such a simple, basic shape. Why is that difficult? Why is a comb so difficult?
Right.
And then in trying to create something custom with a lighting fabricator, that's actually really almost impossible to do, to create this mm-hmm. shape. Well, mm-hmm. I had no idea how you would fabricate it and why that would be so difficult. But now I get it.
Right.
It
right.
completely changes
that's,
your
that's
perspective.
That's what I was going to ask you. Like, when you do custom lighting designs, how do you communicate with the fabricator? Because if we stick to like a designer's perspective, yeah, yeah, gravity doesn't even exist. It's actually something right. out of this world. So yeah. how do you approach it, you in particular?
I will usually share a rendering and a CAD drawing. Yeah.
Okay. Do you ever push? Like, because you're saying like they can't do it. But can they?
Right. everything, right? There's always got to be like a pushback.
I don't like the... I don't know if because I grew up like that, but I hate when people tell me no.
Yes.
Maybe because everything is possible. Especially, like, I think it's more than, I don't know if they're afraid or lazy, but if you go to other countries, Egypt, Europe, there are many things that were created 5,000, 3,000 years ago, why are you telling me you cannot do this today?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's possible. So, and I always make it work. If I want it, I make it work.
And that's a really interesting thing that I've been working with, like ancient technology is coming back. It's a weird thing, but we're diving back into ancient technology mm-hmm. to create the things that we're creating today. As a when I was in the music business, I was like, nothing's new. It's the same notes, mm-hmm. right? We're just recreating all of these things to sound different, but they don't really. If you go backwards in time, you can hear the influence and see the influence. So people are doing it with ancient grains and food production. So we're doing it with ancient technology in building and design, really looking at shapes and, like, how did they make the pyramids? Well, we don't really know.
They had something on us. Just extraterrestrials, right?
Right.
But they made it. So
right,
why
but it's also the same, but it's the same way that we've learned to move heavy things.
Yeah.
We roll them. Like, it's just really basic stuff. So if you do go back to the basics, I agree with you. Almost everything's possible. Almost everything's possible. I don't like no either. And yeah. But we sometimes have to go backward to go forward and really start to understand.
100%.
My concern moving forward is this younger generation does not want to work with their hands.
Yep.
Oh, so we have so many vendors where... Yes, they're vendors, but they're also subcontractors. So, for instance, my precast person, he owns his own company, and he wants to teach his son the trade, and he wants him to take over the business. He says, my son could care less about my business. Mm-hmm. And my concern moving forward is twofold. One, who's going to upholster furniture anymore? No one wants to upholster furniture. Nobody wants to be a plumber anymore. There's all of these things that we need to build a house. And if you are able to find somebody to do these things, what is the cost going to become? Because they're going to be so limited and they're going to be in such high demand.
Well, they already are.
But I think that as AI becomes more popular, these are the only jobs that humans can continue to do. So mm-hmm. they will become more popular again, I think, as AI continues to become more developed. People will learn that working with their hands is one of the only ways to find human work.
Yeah. But I also think, going back to the ancient way of doing things, I think the reason the Egyptians or the Romans were able to do certain things because they did the hard work. Mm-hmm. Like, to get something beautiful and unique, you spend time on it. And I think as human society developed, we became very automated, and now we have AI. Now we are going to go back again doing the plumbing thing. So I think it's just kind of like how we are evolving. But the same thing, like when I see plaster work everywhere, everybody's doing plaster, but that was there years ago, right? Yeah. Now everybody is getting into that. And I think at some point people didn't do the plaster thinking, oh, it's super expensive, it's very labor intensive, and it's this and that. But now I guess technology has kind of, sped up that whole process, but we are now there. So I think we will constantly see this. And I think the idea is for us as designers and craftsmen, people who do this, to keep that craftsmanship alive, right? Like, I think when we start doing things that are like automated or cookie cutter or here, you know, we lose that whole trade. I think mm-hmm. that's something keeps circling back and coming back again. Yeah,
I think there's a real difference between a mindset shift between being a craftsperson and it's a shame when people think of maybe someone who's a plumber as not being a craftsperson, because mm-hmm. I'm sure all of you have worked with a plumber mm-hmm. who's amazing and excellent and makes it so easy, and your pee traps are in just the place you want them, and like everything feels great.
And carpenters.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's really important to have that mindset shift. Mm-hmm.
The word architect comes from Latin, Greek, and it means carpenting, waving. That's what it means. So there are an amazing artisans and architects of wood or whatever. Yeah. We have to respect that, and plumbers or whatever.
I think of kids. If we're talking about younger generation, the kids these days.
People, you know, it's funny. It's like we bill our clients and they see how much the plumber charged because we're all open book. Everything's transparent. And they go, oh, my God, these guys, like, make so much money. And I go, yeah, send your kid to trade school because, you know, they make more money than your doctor, yeah. Right? They make, like, and so if you can, if you like to work with your hands and you're interested in art and you're interested in building and you're interested in how things go together, like, trades are the perfect place for men and women. We get phone calls and emails all the time about people wanting to know, like, what my kid wants to learn how to do what you do. And I go, well, do you actually know what I do? You know, and then we have that conversation. And they say, well, what I really want to do is X, Y, Z. And I said, oh, go to trade school or join the union or a gazillion different things that you can do to get to where you're going. But don't bother going to college if you don't want to be in a degree program mm-hmm. that sets you up for something that, like, get out there and do it. Get under a house and start sweating pipe. Mm-hmm. Start pulling rope with an electrician. Learn how to use those muscles and become an artist in whatever trade it is, because it really is an art. Yeah. I've done every trade. I know how hard they are, but I know how amazing all of our people are that we all work with, because they get us from point A to point B seemingly without an issue.
Yeah. to that point, I see sometimes what happens when people try to cheap out on their trades. God. I just worked with a client who was having a real hard time installing their bath, and it turns out that the guy was an installer and had never installed a freestanding bath.
Jesus,
that's
scary.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a manufacturer and I'm pretty well versed in plumbing, but I'm not on site. I can't see the conditions. That's something your plumber should be.
Yeah.
Your plumber should know how to plumb it up. Yeah. So it's really important for people to go into the trades. We need tradespeople. We definitely
need
them. Tradespeople.
I need them at this level.
Mm-hmm.
Hiring somebody that has any knowledge of the industry is almost impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, do you wake up and say to your kids, why don't you become a hardware salesperson? Where are these tradespeople going to come from?
We've got to
have the knowledge here. And we pride ourselves on having knowledge in each of the categories we sell, or somebody has it within the organization. But it's tough out
there. It's tough, and I've been with my subs for over 20 years.
Yeah.
And we're all
we've known each
other that long, and we're all trying to retire, but we also realize that we can't do it to the community. So, we can. We absolutely can. But it's really hard to, when you've brought the best of yourself forward for so many decades to your community, it's very, very difficult to say, well, good luck, right?
It's a
tricky thing. AI is never, ever going to replace what, especially in a place where you build custom homes all day. You can't print an LA home. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless it can handle change orders.
Right.
Very good. So how do you create that legacy for yourself?
For me in particular, you know, I've trained or worked with a lot of different women who, in my head, I was like, oh, somebody could take over Dirty Girl. That would be really cool. And then I realized I'm different from a lot of people, like the way my brain works and what I'm capable of and all the different aspects. And we're all probably like that. We all probably are really good at a lot of, like, different types of things that make your practice successful. So how do you replace yourself? Well, I think you have to find two or three or four different people who can take a piece of what you do and hope that they can form you to some degree, if you're talking about your actual practice, about your firm. At the same time, what I've done is, I'm probably the oldest, not chronologically, but the oldest female builder that is in the city, right? And so I get a lot of those phone calls from other women who are coming up, and women who've been here who have never really gotten the notice that they deserve, just because I'm louder than a lot of people. And so I've connected with someone on the East Coast as well. We've been connecting women for the last decade, and we have our own little network of people. And it's one of the reasons I started She Spoke. It's actually a collaborative platform to bring together men and women in the trades, in architecture, in design, in building, in the art world, all of those platforms, everybody needs to be talking and knowing each other, because we are aging out and we need to bring up a whole different group of people who, maybe there is somebody who's making ceramics who actually could start doing something that's in the building trades. Maybe there is somebody who's a painter who goes, oh, wow, I'd love to do faux finishing. Like, whatever it is, that they it never even dawned on them. It never dawned on me to be a contractor. Like, nobody said to me, do you want to be a contractor when you grow up? And nobody said to you, do you want to sell hardwood? Right? Like, no. It's not a conversation any of us had. So it's about us educating and exposing people and changing the conversation and creating space for it to happen, from maker to builder to designer to client, like really making those connections for people, and stop trying to privatize our networks to where nobody can know who's who. And the pie's big enough. The pie's really big. And if we all share in that, it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. That's my mentality. So.
I agree. That's one of the purposes of doctoring up design. Exactly that. Let's all get together and figure it out. We're smart, we're talented, and we can make it happen. And there's enough for everybody.
It's enough from everyone.
Right? Mm-hmm. We just got to do it. We've got to talk and not keep the secrets. Which right.
I always say the same. I mean, I always compare it as a recipe. You cook something wonderful and you want, Marve, how do you do it? Like, and I gave the ingredients. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be the same. Mm-hmm. So it's just about to share whatever and then grow and be our own competition, mm-hmm. and do the best you can, mm-hmm. and then help the community of designers to grow and be respectful, yeah. mostly in the industry where we are on times and in a times that we receive a little respect from many. That's something that we have to work towards too.
Well, I'm so glad that you had mentioned that you are really enjoying commercial design. Mm. I do not enjoy it. Right. And I have people ask me all the time, can you do this for me? No. This is my lane. But now I know that I will refer them to you.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. See, why you do not enjoy commercial?
Curious.
I don't like the materials. I don't like the codes. I don't like anything about it.
But I've only done the materials. Because I use the... It depends what you want to do. The ones that I did has a lot of marbles and stuff. So it's in your lane. I know what you mean. Like office, it's boring.
It is.
You know, those mm-hmm. doctor's office or whatever. Mm-hmm. I know the codes because I have to know it from right. the package and present it to the city. But we have to know the codes even if we're doing residential. We have to take care of our clients and whatever we are doing. But if you don't want to do the commercial because it's boring, but if you get something fun, that you can be more creative, I think that's what...
I feel more limited mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. fabrics, wall coverings. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have a plethora of what I can choose from because I have to start looking at fire ratings and all of it, you know.
Versus residential products.
Right. Yeah. But there are great commercial products out there.
Yes, there are.
It's so interesting because I think for me, doing commercial design, I actually in some ways feel more creative because I'm designing around a concept and a narrative. So every single choice that I make has to support this sort of like transportive feeling.
Yeah.
That it's almost like the challenge forces me to be more creative. Not that I like it more than residential, but it's just a different kind of creative.
It's a different, and I think many materials these days are commercial approved, fire approved, ROPS, all the things that involve to be a commercial material. You can find it, they say, in many range of, you know, ideas, even velvet that used
beautiful
not to
velvet.
Be in
yeah,
the
linen.
You can find it now. Linen, it's amazing. It's just great. Yeah. I just love it.
I think it's kind of, I don't want to speak for you, Nicole, but I feel like I can understand the dislike of commercial because it is so different also. Like, just the way that you run the project itself.
It's different.
You're designing not just for a couple or one person. You're designing for the clientele in a much more general sense. Like, the experience is supposed to be different. And then, you know, the conversations are going to be different too. Yeah, like when you're in commercial, it's a little bit more business. Professional, mm-hmm. a little bit...
technical.
I don't want to say less emotion because there's always emotions, but with residential, you know, it's like, okay, everybody take off their shoes in some cases, right?
Yeah.
I have
something that I don't like.
This is where I take off my jacket. This is where I put on my pajamas. Like,
oh,
it's
wow,
a much
true.
More personal space.
What commercial projects do you guys work on?
I like both, but what I'm going to say something that I don't like so everybody don't think that I like everything. Approvals from the city.
Oh.
It took almost 2 years.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that I don't like it. Just to them to be so picky, depends on the city, but it's daunting.
I think what I love about residential is I love working with the people.
Yeah.
I love the meetings. I love going to their homes. I love going to lunch with them. You learn so much about them, their children. They learn about you. It just feels so much more personal. I have clients coming in my office dropping off pastries for me and coming in to sell me Girl Scout cookies because they're with their little daughter that I know. And I just love that part of it.
I guess I have to go to a commercial that I don't like, but this is my first one, so I cannot talk too much. But this client, we became friends. Mm-hmm. It was very sensitive for her. It's her bakery. She's a pastry chef. And she brought me citron tarts every time we met. So I enjoyed it so much, and we became friends. And it was personal for her. It's her space. When she saw it all together, she cried.
Yeah.
So, and it was beautiful. That's why I said I enjoyed it so much. But I don't know what's going to be in the future.
I think it depends on the space.
It depends.
I do boutique commercial, but I don't want to build a mall.
Right.
You know, I just, it's
no,
not
me neither.
Thing,
yeah.
And it's
bakery
not,
versus a doctor.
Yes.
Not an
yes.
answer.
Yes.
Or a chain versus.
Yeah. Right.
Right. There's it can be so intimate.
Yeah.
And it is. Cause
I'm friends with all of my clients, except for two, because I didn't like them. I fired them, and that's that. That's the end of that story. But the rest of them, I'm friends with. And I've known for years and years and years, and we've done multiple projects with a lot of our clients, where like, and then we do their kids' homes, and then we do their grandkids' homes.
Generational.
Or if we're doing a boutique commercial space, that client introduces us to, you know, 20 different other people who are usually residential, but it's their clients, right? Their clients come in by beautiful furnishings, and then so it's that network again. But I just I can't do that mall type. I can't. And I also hate the codes. I'm like, you know, just and the MEPs and all the stuff like that. It's just very, very impersonal to me.
Mm-hmm.
As a builder, I always want to create an environment, and I think you all want to design an environment, right? That mm-hmm. that says something, whether it's about a brand or family. That's important in our work. Some people do it for the money. Some people just do it for the money. They're going to go, you know, Turner Construction, who's building SoFi and Intuit Dome and all of that. They're the managing, they're the prime contractor for everything going on in Inglewood. They don't actually, you know, they sub it all out, but they don't actually like know the people that are going to be there. They're building a city, and that's also needed. It's just not what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I also don't want to be on a project for 15 years, you know, like that.
They tend to be more like engineering.
They are.
So that's why they're capable of doing stuff like
they're
that.
They're a huge company. They're not actually out there like with hammers and stuff. They're developing. But it also needs
it's
to be
needed,
done. Somebody called and said, do you want to do any of the build? And I was like, it's not even my world, right? And it's not my world for design. I don't know anything about the rules and regulation. That's not my lane. That's so not my lane.
That's why I was asking you, what commercial projects have you guys worked on? Because
I've worked on medical offices, plastic surgeons' offices. And when I say medical, I mean like high-rise medical surgical centers, office spaces. I just don't enjoy it.
It
doesn't.
Very technical.
Yeah. It doesn't make me want to get up in the morning and go to work.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm working on new construction or decor for a home.
It's fascinating. Right?
You can sit me in front of a computer at 7 a.m. and somebody has to come and go, okay, I'm calling it. You got to get up. Go.
Yeah.
You've been here for 12 hours, 13
hours.
Put
pants on.
Yeah.
And, you know, the cool and favorite thing about it is that it's so exciting that you, as you know, you probably do the budget and you say, okay, I'm going to spend 2 weeks during the design phase, and then it obviously ends up being 3 or 4 because you go over the budget, but you that's because you enjoy it so much versus the ones that you don't like so much.
To add to Nicole, like when you said you love residential because the connection you have and meeting the clients, talking to them, and that personal relationship, which is exactly the same for me, I love that. I also have heard the totally opposite, and the reason I wanted to bring it up because I know for you and for me, and I think a lot of us here, it's what we like, that interaction. But I've heard from designers and pretty like they're doing well and they quit because that's one area they do not like. They do not like to go into somebody's home, listen to their personal thing, you know, because it's like a psychology, right? Like a lot of people, and it's not one, few people have told me that, and it was very surprising to me because to me that's like the part of the whole thing. It's fun
that they have trust in you, like they're
but for themselves. Some people, so that's why I think, you know, it was interesting because I feel the same. And then I heard that, oh, no, that's the one aspect of design that I do not like. And that's why I stopped doing design. So that was kind of
it gets personalized. Yeah. But that's when you build barriers and you don't get so into it. Because then it defeats the whole purpose of being professional and just be a designer, not a psychologist, a real psychologist.
The budgets are also very different, though. I as a builder, I can't even build a commercial space with my residential subs because of the cost difference.
They're different animals, too.
They're so different. And so you have to carry an entirely different set of subcontractors.
It's black and white.
Yep.
Yeah. Very, very different.
Yeah.
I have a question. Are the codes and regulations affecting your high-end residential sales? Let's put it in the beginning phase of your client meetings?
No, not in residential.
We always find a way.
Not on high end.
except for one thing for me. It's so a lot of our houses in like Bel Air, Santa Monica, where everything's going underground, has been for years, all the services. Mm-hmm. The timeline and the amount of money it costs to underground your electrical at this point is so substantial that it's painful to even tell them what it's going to be. And these are not people who don't have a lot of money, but it's that painful.
Yeah.
And
no,
so,
I get it.
You know,
it's money you don't see.
It's not the pretty part. We're 3.5 years into a build right now, and we've been trying to get the electrical service in for the last 18 months, and they can't find a way in. It's not that...
I can't believe it. Wow.
Yeah. It's tough. So you've got clients who started pre-pandemic who expected to be out of their house for 14 months. That's 38 months later. And they've been traveling the world with their two little kids trying to stay busy and going from Airbnb to Airbnb, and finally I said, we have one wing of the house done and we'll backfeed the meter and go live in the house until, you know, like if that's what you want to do. It's like camping, but a little bit, but it's where do you go after a while? So that's really hard for people to hear, that I can't control the utility companies. And so it's not happening at the front end, it's happening at the back end. So what I would say is if you're designing as an architect, especially when you go and start designing that portion of the project, day one, like figure out, like get that. We used to be able to wait until, you know, we were 6 months out or 4 months out, we'd start really calling upon people to get that work done. And now I'm like, it's one of the first things I'm doing now. It really is. And even with that, we're still not done with the process because we can't, the utility companies are so busy. Mm-hmm. Because of all, it's like a domino effect is what's happened with the pandemic. Everybody wanted to do their house, everybody did their house, and there weren't enough people to service it. So maybe that'll work itself out. It has not. It definitely has not. And that's rough. And I think for commercial people, it's worse commercial clients because you're trying to open a business.
I've had a restaurant sit empty. Yeah. Finished, mm-hmm. but unable to open.
Yeah,
exactly. My client paid over 2 years. Every month.
2 years.
Not opening, waiting for the city. She lost a lot of money. Yeah. Although she was doing catering, but still. It was something that she was paying.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's no like, oh, sorry, here's your rebate. It's like, no.
Oh, no.
You better have the money.
No, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay with residential. I like it just the way it is.
You refer that to me.
I'll send it to you. You know, and the funny thing is I worked on a commercial project when I first got started in my career, but it was a resort. It was both the Sandals Resort in Barbados and then a private resort in the Bahamas. But it was like a residential project to me. So I was using furniture.
It's a hotel.
Yeah, so that's why I was asking, like, what commercial projects have you or are you working on? Because the hotel business or the resort, you know, side of it.
I love to do a boutique hotel. It's one of my main dreams to get in there.
You have to know a lot of codes. You have to know a lot of international codes. I just found one in Israel.
Oh, you did? Nice.
Beautiful hotel in Israel.
Of course.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. Kotor.
And shipped all the material from Italy direct.
There you go.
Instead of bringing it here.
Right.
Nice. Kotor.
Yeah. Michelle, what's the difference? Like, when you get involved in something abroad like that, you have to understand what's going on from a code sense as well as far as product and fire ratings a little bit?
Fire ratings, yes. As far as it pertains to the material.
Okay.
Absolutely. I make it my job to do that so I can at least have an educated conversation at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But I start at the architectural level. So the plan, design and development even, talking about materials and how they work on the project. And, you know, it could be I'm working on material now 4 or 5 years ago project. So... And they all change. All the codes have changed.
They get updated.
Yeah, everything has changed. Every time you think you know it, you have to refresh. Also, we do a yearly talk with Ben Stapleton from the Green Building Council. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be here in July, and we're going to be talking about what's going on locally and in specs and all of the new codes that are coming, and you know, how much do you have to know, and mm-hmm. how is it affecting your end user, your client,
right? And yes. Also, all the, you know, cradle to cradle,
that's great because they're always not only promoting but showing us the latest materials, like the sustainable materials and LEED certified projects. That helps us designers choose the right ones, mm-hmm. right. So we don't get stuck in the past choosing old school materials.
No, exactly. And that's basically my job here, is to make sure I know all of those things and work with a Green Building Council or different products internationally. To understand how they fit in this marketplace.
Well, that's a curious question. As a builder. I'm curious about everybody's process, actually, from a design standpoint of how you, if you, and how you, because I know every design firm is different, research materials that are going into your projects and how you qualify them for your projects. Because something I've found as a builder is, more often than not, in the last few years, there's a lot of people working in the industry who aren't qualified to be leading design teams or call themselves designers, and some of them call themselves architects and they aren't, and that's really confusing for me as a builder because I rely upon people by title sometimes is like what they're actually bringing to the table. So I'm curious how that, I don't know, what do you do, like what, how do you decide what you're going to use, and do you have a team of people that, or do you look everything up and kind of have a process? Because I'm trying to be better at understanding the new job definitions, if that makes sense.
It is smart in itself.
Check their credentials.
Yeah.
Background.
I graduated architect in interiors, and in California, I cannot use the word architect in my things. It's very delicate. And also design and things like that, how labeled you are or whatever. So it's a very sensitive, but you want it to stand out, right? So you want to be like, okay, so I'm doing this and that. So I always say, this is my study, this is yada yada, and this is my experience. And I guess the client also, or I think your work will speak by itself too, mm-hmm. the experience you bring to the table.
Yeah, because you know, you're looking at code and developing plan sets, yes. and specing materials.
I do the whole package, yeah. the construction documents. I do all those things.
Which might be very different from someone who doesn't CAD or right. do documents, construction documents, or anything yeah. else. So, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting, but it's interesting to me.
As a builder, though, how do you handle it when you're now working with somebody who's obviously not qualified or, you
That's
know?
A great question.
Okay, so there's two things. One is, in my contract, I have a right to terminate the contract if I feel I'm in jeopardy by someone's lack of qualification because of my liability for the project. If I'm the only person with a license on a project, then I'm basically taking on liability for everybody's work. That's a really precarious situation to be in. Or we partner with as needed. If there's a design team that's working on a project that just says, hey, this is, I always say, where do you start and stop? That's the first conversation. Yeah. Where do you start and stop? And then, because we want to work with good people, and then I say to the client, do you understand that this is where, and you know, we all go together, this is where this person starts and stops. I have a firm that can fill in this gap as whatever level, and then we'll build as well, so that we're actually going in collaborating and understanding who's supposed to be doing what, because there's nothing worse than waiting for an RFI to get answered and you think that it's coming to you when really you should self-answer it, right?
So being in the business as long as you have, mm-hmm. can't you just like spot within 5 minutes that somebody doesn't know what they're doing?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And I get what you're saying. It's not that easy.
It's easy for me.
It's very easy.
You can look at someone's drawing set and uh-huh. for me very yeah. quickly, and then I'll say, can I see your CAD files? And then we see their CAD mm-hmm. files, and we go, oh my God. And, you know, we see that maybe there's like, we just can see it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So the drafters in my mm-hmm. office have been doing drafting for 30 years. They can see it. So the two projects I'm on right now, primarily, mm-hmm. we've replaced the design team out of necessity. Mm-hmm. That's not something I like to do. It's very exhausting. We're really tired. I mean, like, to be the quote-unquote architect of a project and the interiors company and the builder is... Like, I'm taking the summer off. I'm exhausted. I don't want to work that way. But it's gotten to a point where sometimes that happens, and that's just because people haven't really been honest about what they're capable of. Mm-hmm. There's no reason we can't all work mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. It's just, what are you capable of, and what do you need from me?
I will tell you, just getting a cost breakdown from a builder, if mm-hmm. a client brings it to me and says, oh, I hired this builder, I can take one look at the cost mm-hmm. breakdown and know immediately mm-hmm. this person will know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you're going to get
screwed. It's not complete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are taking over a design project, and I said, okay, well, I need the design binder. Big home. Yeah. But the binder's like this thick. Mm-hmm. We're working on a 6,600 square foot house right now. I have first floor, second floor. Mm-hmm. And they're about this thick mm-hmm. because of the construction documents. And I think, there's not enough information in here to build this scale of a home. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I just built a 7,000 square foot with 16 pages.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Doctoring Up Design, the official podcast of Design Hardware. Please make sure you are subscribing to the show so you don't miss a single episode. And you can reach us via email or any of the socials on the website at designhardware.com or check the show notes for links. Thanks for listening. And thank you, Andres, Christine, Cricket, Huma, James, Joan, Kara, Leslie, Marbe, Mark, Nicole, and Ridma. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your input and guidance. You guys are amazing. Thank you, Avi Balsam and Michelle Solomons with Design Hardware. And again, thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.